It's just, it's blinkered, it's clickbait, and it's just plain wrong most of the time.
Hey, what's going on? I hope you're having a good week as always. Enjoyed this episode. Lots to get stuck into this week. It is just for informational purposes. It's not financial advice, of course. But without further ado, let's get into this week's episode.
All right. Let's go for another pod then, shall we? Plenty to talk about this week. It's a spicy time in this world, I would say. There's lots going on. Your NFTs are officially dead. It's official, says the mainstream. This article has been, there's many articles we've been going around referencing. I think one of the worst studies I've seen of all time, although in many ways they are also right. But we'll dive into it because it's extremely interesting. I think it's just hilarious who has written it.
Or is it clickbait? Is it clickbait or is it? There's a lot to think about here, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, we'll get there in just a second. There's also quite an awesome looking XR device, a headset that has the same resolution as the Apple Vision Pro, but it's far, far cheaper. It's on sale now. It looks really cool. Looks really good. We'll talk about that. It's not one that I knew a lot about. You spotted it, Robin. So yeah, loads to talk about there. And have Yuga Labs, the creators of Bored Ape Yacht Club, of course, and the owners of the CryptoPunks IP, have they dropped their main builders for their Metaverse World Other Side, which is their big sort of project?
Ooh, controversy. Yuga, controversy. We love it. Let's spice it up. Let's spice it up. Let's hack into some Bored Apes.
Yeah, I'm excited about this episode because it's an interesting time in this space. So this is the article that you probably will have seen. Rolling Stone went with it and loads of other publications have gone with it since. Essentially, the title is referencing this study that has found that 95% of NFTs are largely worthless now at this point in the market. Now, as we say, lots to talk about here. I find these articles really interesting for a few reasons, because they are usually based on some aspect of truth. Of course, there's something in there that is true, else they probably wouldn't exist. But with all these things, especially when it's kind of mainstream articles that are just sort of published and they go viral, kind of by definition, the people who have written them don't have time and aren't experts in the space at all. They don't have time to go into any of the sort of nuances of this stuff because they're writing lots of articles and they're needing to get hits, and that is the clickbait economy. And we'll go through why that's important in a second. And obviously great clickbait headlines, get loads of views and off we go. And everyone believes them and most people leave, and that's the sentiment. So I just dived into the article and let's go through it because it's referencing this article published by industry researchers Dapp Gamble. Now, who are Dapp Gamble was my first port of call, because who has written this publication, this research report? Dapp Gamble are a random crypto gambling website that I've never heard of, with 115 followers on Twitter, and some of their achievements on their site, which looks like their website looks like a sort of GCSE project from the 90s. Just instantly, I was like, okay, this is all just strange immediately. One of their achievements that they include was September last year, where they reached 100 visits to their website. So that was their achievement last year, this company who are a sort of random crypto gambling website. I do understand the irony of this company who've written it potentially being nonsense about an industry that is people are claiming nonsense. But anyway, I dived into the team a little bit because I was like, okay, well, who's behind this? Who's writing these articles? On their website, who is the team behind Dapp Gamble? Our team is made up of industry professionals with years of experience in iGaming, not sure what iGaming is, don't think that's a thing, finance and blockchain technology. They are eager to provide you with accurate information because they're constantly up to date on what is occurring in the world of cryptocurrency gambling. Okay, their team includes the writer of this article, Vlad Hatigan, a crypto gaming expert, which I then went on his Twitter, and bear in mind, I've been in this space quite a long time. I always, a good way to kind of filter people who might have a voice in this space and might be kind of genuinely interesting is to see who else in the space follows them. And, you know, if they've been in the space working for a long time and they're respected, then usually they're followed by quite a lot of people in the industry. Not a single person that I know at all follows Vlad. No offense to Vlad. I'm sure he's a lovely man. But I was just like, okay, it's this sort of crypto gaming expert is followed by absolutely none of the projects or people in the industry. Interesting. A man called Olusana Akmu, who is a cutting edge technologies expert, again, followed by absolutely nobody in this industry. And in fact, Dapp Gamble isn't followed by a single person or company that I know in this industry also, which is fine. That doesn't necessarily say anything. I then went through the report, which is, I'll link it below so you can have a read yourself. And as I say, like, I don't want to completely destroy it because I think lots of what they say has truth here. Of course, the market has been down and That's fine. But some of the things that they reference, they talk about the study of data that they've collected from 75,000 NFT projects, which is a strange number because there are millions of NFTs, not 75,000 seems to be plucked out of the air, none of which they mention which any of those projects are as well or what any of those collections are. There's also interesting chunks. Sorry, I'll let you come in a second, but I'm just going to get through what I found in the report. A sentence that I particularly liked was one that they mentioned. This surplus of supply over demand, what? Is creating a buyer's market where potential investors are becoming more discerning, carefully evaluating the style, uniqueness, and potential value of NFTs before making a purchase. They apparently sampled over 74,000 NFTs, but failed to mention a single one of what they were. And then they quoted a listed price. This was alarm bells. They quoted a listed price of MAC contract. I don't know what MAC contract is, but basically their argument was that there's a collection that somebody has listed the price for as $13 million, but with the most recent sale as $18. So that's when it changed hands. And they were like, that's evidence that the market is collapsing and that this is rubbish, which completely, you can list anything at any price. It doesn't have any assertion to how valuable it is at all. So very strange. Anyway, let's get into this story, because as I say, there's truth in it directionally, but I always find it interesting when all of the mainstream runs with this viral article, which is written by some people who, as far as I can tell, have no idea what they're talking about. So there we go. What was your thoughts reading this, Robin?
Okay, well, let's take it from the top down. So this appeared in Rolling Stone. The headline, your NFTs are actually finally totally worthless. So this is by Miles Klee, who is a writer at Rolling Stone, and his speciality is the weirder subcultures of the internet, of which, of course, NFTs are one. This is the same Rolling Stone, by the way, that made this. This, if you are listening to us, is the Bored Ape zine that Rolling Stone put out. This is a zine extolling the virtues of this weird subculture. Rolling Stone has partnered with Bored Ape Yacht Club to create a special edition zine that features two special covers. The zine also features five derivative apes created by artists with a deep affection for the Bored Ape community, and includes why did they do that? Why did Rolling Stone, arbiters of everything that is culturally fantastic and wonderful and great through the decades, why did they do this? And why is it so fantastic for them to now dunk on NFTs and by extension say, oh yeah, we were idiots, we were wrong? I don't think there's anything necessarily particularly deep or interesting about this article. It's just the way that it gets picked up. We are a late stage bear. And if you haven't been through a crypto bear market, and you haven't been through a crypto bull market, this won't mean anything to you. It's a stupid cycle that is beholden to the Bitcoin halving cycle. And it just means we go up and we go down in these absurd hype cycles every 4 years. So the thing about market cycles is they turn around. They don't go down forever. But generally what tends to happen is the headlines around this period, late stage bear, are so self-congratulatory, it's just so easy to write negative critique about a space whose financial value has been so pummeled without ever even considering what else actually might be going on here. The second part of this is the fact that they put the word finally, totally worthless. Nothing is ever completely worthless in the digital domain because things get discovered by people, they get traded. And if you've ever been in this space for more than 5 minutes, you will have come across these shit coins that get traded, meme coins. They have no inherent value. Doge has no inherent value, but it does have a value. Of course it has a value. It has a value to the people that trade it, who commit time to it. There's a community. Those values aren't necessarily reflected in the cost of buying one, of an asset, trading hands, changing hands between two parties who agree that they want to do that. So this idea of something being totally worthless, it discounts the ability of something to have value above and beyond the number and the dollar sign that is put next to it. Now, I will say this, that the reason those headlines come up is because what was seized upon during the NFT craze, and it started with CryptoPunks, really. CryptoPunks started going up in value like exponentially, and then the likes of Gary Vee jumped on and was like, I am buying these CryptoPunks because these are artifacts, cultural artifacts that represent the future of this new cultural space. Everyone piled on, followed along behind, was like, yeah, I can make money off this. Yeah. But there were some obscene valuations. And it's not like we didn't know it at the time. It's not like we didn't know this was crazy. But that's just people being people. So instead of like just getting angry at a JPEG or NFTs, which are just a file format. Get angry at human behavior. Get angry at the people. The technology itself has nothing to do with this, and it is not to blame. The second half of the Dapp Gamble hit piece was around, guess what? It was the impact on the environment. And they went to great length to explain just how many carbon tons had been created by all of these NFTs that were created. And when someone writes a piece like this and they are deliberately fixated on that, then the simplest thing you can ask them is like, what is the environmental impact of your Netflix subscription? Please write that in the comment below. Video storage, YouTube, what is the environmental impact of all of that? Please tell me now. And if you're so worried about that, please restrict your consumption of that. Thank you very much. You're writing about AI. Okay, let's talk about the environmental impact of all of that compute power. Nobody's doing that. Now, it's not to say that there hasn't been an environmental impact. The fact is, Ethereum, as they rightly say, the second largest cryptocurrency after Bitcoin, Ethereum has very negligible environmental impact because they changed it. They knew it was a problem. They changed it. Where is that in your article? It's not there. Like most of the new blockchains, negligible of environmental impact. That's not to say that Bitcoin and mining hasn't been a problem in the past, because it has. But what really frustrates me is that the writers of these articles assume that nothing can change, assume that nobody cares about this stuff, assume that because the most visible elements of it are braggadocious, they are flamboyant, they're obnoxious, they are just desperately dislikable people, that that's all that's going on here. It just isn't the case. It just isn't the case. Like the Ethereum decentralized community made a very hard decision to move from proof of work to proof of stake. And it was very difficult for them to do so, but they did it, and they did it successfully. They created a deflationary ecosystem that has a negligible environmental impact. And so where's the problem? Like seriously, where's the problem right now? It's just, it's blinkered, it's clickbait, and it's just plain wrong most of the time.
Yeah, it's so interesting because there's so many levels of understanding of this world. Like when you talk about energy and proof of work as a system is really important if you're to expel energy, if you're talking about hard money and all those things, which is a different conversation. It's actually really important and really part of it. But you can tell people's level of understanding with the certain things that they write about, like that energy conversation has been very much disproven with NFTs, but they haven't mentioned any of that. So you're like, okay, so we can see where you're at with this. And ultimately, when you step out, especially if you've been through cycles before, it's just a very clear marker of like where we are in this cycle. This is a absolute gift of a sort of market bottom. Does that mean that they're wrong in terms of that 95% of these NFTs are going to come back? No, of course, like that is true. But it's just a marker of the cycle. It's mainly noise if you go deeper and really understand things here. But it's always just interesting. And most people, if you ride the waves of the mainstream, you would just get sort of bashed along because you'll believe like, oh, okay, it's all dead. And then when they come back in a slightly different form, probably generative art and is going to carry on, probably gaming comes back with loads of Web3 NFT gaming things, will be in a new part of the cycle and it will be all hype again. And that's just what happened. So it's just really interesting, isn't it, to take a step out and be like, okay, here's where we are. And can we definitely say what's going to come next in the hype cycle? No. Can we say there'll be another hype cycle? Yes, because that is, like you say, human behavior. So removing yourself from that and just observing it is pretty interesting, I think. But yeah.
It's such a simple thing. If you are a hater of this space, you can look at the data and you can understand that there are cycles. And most people who enter the crypto space always enter way too late in the cycle, and they get burned because they are late to the game. And most of the big gains that people can make trading this market, and that's, you know, to be honest, there's nothing illegal about trading. You can trade any market you want, and regulation is coming in. It's like, you're allowed to do that. That is not a problem. So if that's your game, then this is the best time you'll ever have. Like, I think we'll probably see another dip, like before Christmas, like the last dip before the halving happens. But like, this is a gift right now. And if you really hate this space, you can make a really cheap bet on something right now, because it doesn't cost you very much, against yourself. You can hedge yourself. Like, I hate this space, but I love money and I want to be right because I fucking missed out last time. I'm just going to make a hate bet on something because it's cheap. And the stupid thing is, people really hated on NFTs for being overpriced and out of reach. Now they're cheap. I was like, they're worthless. They're valueless. It's like, you want them cheap. You want them cheap. If you're an investor and you have a thesis, you're licking your lips. If you are an investor, you have no thesis and you're betting against yourself. What if I'm wrong? It's a cheap bet to make. Like, everything is set up right now to be fantastic for those who have the courage or the circumspection to look at this and just see opportunity. And like, I think that's the dirtiest word in any space is opportunity, because opportunities get exploited. And the word exploit is, again, a dirty word. It feels like hackers. It feels like things. But exploit, the word exploit just means to take advantage of, in the sense of to use it. There is something there. I'll exploit that. And that's it. There is nothing dirty about it. So knowledge is power. We talk about stuff here. And like, I will say that most NFT projects are overpriced, or were overpriced, and were bollocks. They were fun, and that was the value, but they were bollocks. And they were trying to figure out how not to be bollocks. Some of them have done a really good job of looking like they know what they're doing, and we're going to cover one of them later. But most of them have no clue. And the reason they have no clue is because there are very few examples of how to do it right, because nobody really knows. And there are very few projects that have the team or the courage to push in a direction that nobody else is pushing in, because like, you really go out on a limb if you do that. And in the so-called investors, we call them flippers. The flippers, they will desert you in their droves if there's the slightest suspicion that the market doesn't like what you're doing. So taking any kind of risk is not to be, they just don't do it. So what happens? Everyone just fucking copies everybody else. So there's the playbook. Do this. Yuga did this. Pudgy Penguins did this. That's what you do. Azuki did that. And then everyone just copies everyone else. It's like you get these clones and these forks of everything else. And that's the bit that I really hate. Like, you're seeing it in any kind of content creation. Everyone's just copying everyone else because it's so easy to do, to fork an idea, to fork a system, to fork a chain, to fork a token. And that's one of the worst things about crypto. Everything is just a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. And we know what happens. The resolution, the fidelity of stuff reduces exponentially over time, the more copies you make. And so you just end up with a sea of shit.
Yeah, but it's so true of like the internet in general, right? You could have equally have probably written an article a few years ago on, say, 95% of YouTube videos get under 100 views, so YouTube's useless, or 95% of websites are valueless and don't get. But it's like, yeah, that's kind of how the internet works. Admittedly, obviously here there's a trading element, so it's different. So people, you know, if you get it wrong, you can lose more value than if you start a website, or a YouTube video is free, obviously. But like, it's just how the internet works. So yeah, most of it is useless because it's you know, a digital landscape, but you can't extrapolate on from there. And
exactly,
last point on the kind of cycle stuff is like, it's so interesting. There's, I have a friend of mine in my head who texts me. Well, I know whenever I get a text from her when we're in a bull market phase and everyone's talking about it, I know that we're near the top, because by definition it's rolled through like this moment where nobody's really talking about it or everybody hates it, and it's gone through to the mainstream cycle of like a big celebrity or something has done something with crypto or whatever, and then they ask me about it because it's like, okay, it's reached you, at which point it's far too late, right? You're towards the top. Equally, at this moment now, when you're getting texts by people like, oh, how are those NFTs or whatever, because they've seen this article, you're way, like, it's the flip side completely of that, right? Like, it's that's why most people buy at the top and sell at the bottom, right? And they lose. That's
It's the "Are you okay?" message. It's like, "Are you okay? Yeah. Are you okay?" Yeah, no, dude, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Perfect measure of where we are. Like, it's very, very interesting, isn't it? And yeah, it's you have to be careful. Who knows?
But listen, it's the power. It's the power law. Like, the power law replicates across any system where you've got a bunch of people or a bunch of things competing for attention. Like, the top 2% make up 98% of the value, and that's just what it is. So I guess where NFTs were representative of culture in general is that it was just really super easy to make them. And it was super easy for a bunch of people to create. And everyone's, well, I won't say everyone, but there's a lot of people kind of getting on this AI thing. I can't remember how many tweets I've seen where it's like, we are about to unleash a wave of creativity, the likes of which we have never seen, thanks to AI. And I dispute that. I believe we will unleash a wave of plagiarism, the likes of which we have never seen before. Yes.
Yeah, it will follow the same cycle. It's amazing how your brain gets almost tricked every time. But yeah,
yes.
Interesting. Okay, well, let's move on from that. I'll link it below if you want to have a read of it. Let's talk about the Immersed Visor XR headset, which is really, really cool. So Immersed, who are the developer of a popular virtual desktop app of the same name, they have, you can now pre-order it, they've developed an XR device, which looks really cool. It's kind of like lightweight ski sunglasses that people used to wear in the 90s when they were wearing like a full onesie and going down the slopes that was neon colored. That's
the Oakley ones. Like when you thought of like Glenn Plake, there's a name, Scott Schmidt and Glenn Plake, the guys with like blonde Mohican like that. He was wearing these badass Oakley wraparounds. I mean, yes, that's what they look like. You're not wrong.
Yeah, I think they're cool. I think it's on point, on fashion. They have three variants, all at different resolutions, or two of them at different resolutions, at different price points. So there's a Founders Edition, which seems to be, it's $1,000 and it ships early and you get a few benefits, but essentially it's the same product as the second one, which is the Visor 4K model. It costs $750, 4K resolution per eye, which matches the resolution of the Apple Vision Pro's, obviously very premium displays. There's then a budget version, budget Visor, which this is the cheapest model. It's the same apart from the resolution as the other headset, but it's priced at $500, which is obviously about a seventh of the price of the Apple Vision Pro. Now, they are very different things. You know, this is really more for a display, but they do tease at some features of being able to go into worlds and stuff like that as well. But it weighs 25% less than a phone, so it's just a few ounces. They describe the color pass-through quality as higher resolution than what's available on the market at the moment. And it comes with a head strap and earpieces as well. It also has hand and eye tracking, which is pretty amazing for a headset this advanced for this price. And they describe it as a monitor and TV replacement, but the Immersed app supports up to 5 virtual monitors. You need a connection to a PC or Mac. And the final point I wanted to do quickly. So yeah, since the Immersed custom builds each visor for optimal fit, you fit it to your face, which is cool. And various virtual environments are supported. There's not loads of information on that yet. But yeah, this is pretty interesting. You spotted this. I thought this was really, really cool.
Yeah, there's definitely a new breed, a new generation of headsets. And there's no doubt we are going to see XR and AR sort of dominate conversations a lot when, obviously, in the build-up to Vision Pro coming out. There's a couple of reasons why this was an interesting one. So the young man behind Immersed, Renji Bijoy, is a really affable, interesting proponent for this space. And I was talking to some VC buddies of mine over during the week. Yeah, we're just sort of hanging out, you know, in Clubhouse talking about VC stuff.
Ooh, yeah.
God, I'm a douche, right? but yeah, we were talking about this headset. Immersed basically is interesting because it's a productivity app, basically, and it allows you to use like multi-display while you're sitting at your desk. And what's interesting about it is that it's the most used app by power users of any VR app. So people spend up to 40 hours a week using this thing because it's primarily just for, you know, adding like 6 displays in front of you. But obviously you're using existing headsets and there's probably, you know, fatigue that comes with that. So what they've said basically is we think productivity is going to be a big deal for the workplace. Vision Pro validates that thesis. And here's our headset version of it. So there's a couple of really important things here. It's going to be light, very, very light. We know that the Vision Pro is heavy and won't really be a great kind of long-term, you know, long-duration, wear-all-day kind of headset. But this is designed to be that. It is, of course, tethered to a PC, and the PC is doing all the heavy lifting. So that means that's why it's light. With the Vision Pro, you've got a little fanny pack, a little belt pack thing there that's just sitting there that's clearly going to be a pain in the butt. We know that already. So that's interesting. Obviously, the price is phenomenal. The price is absolutely incredible. If you think about what you're getting here, it's pretty dope. I mean, we have to reserve judgment until we've actually tried it out. But like just the 4K, the hand and eye tracking for that price. I mean, everyone was talking about the Vision Pro's feature set and how, like, you know, you've got basically an M2 processor behind each, you know, lens. It's like, wow. but this doesn't have to do that. Your PC is the M2 processor. So it's really cool. I can't wait to try it. And the reason I've sort of gotten, I picked this story up is because I'm preparing for an absolutely monstrous VR challenge. I'm going to be trying to break a world record in VR, and the headset is a very important component of that. Obviously, I ran a marathon for 9.5 hours wearing the Quest Pro, and you know, weirdly, the one of the things that I remember from that world record attempt, because you were there as well. I'm sorry, the ultra marathon. It's like the headset wasn't ever an issue. I never got fatigued. I never got into a place where I was like disconnected or queasy or anything else. It never became a problem, which I was really surprised about, because you would have thought wearing something on your face for that long would be a problem. Never was. So, but for this world record attempt, we're looking at like significantly longer than 9.5 hours in so I'm really curious to see where these headsets are going to go. There's another piece of this, which is physiologically human beings are changing as a result of their mobile phone usage. Have you seen studies of like people's fourth and fifth vertebrae are seriously impaired just from like leaning over and looking at a phone? And you know, there's this I guess it's probably true that the shape of our eyes is somewhat changing as a result of looking at a lot of screens. And so you do have to wonder, like, what are the long-term impacts of like a world in which goggles, spatial computing devices are ever-present or omnipresent and just part of daily life? I nobody knows. Nobody actually knows. And I heard a little sniff of a rumor that your friend's Sandbox VR, that create that those incredible VR experiences, are looking into certain things regarding long-term exposure to VR. So
interesting. You know. Okay.
Yeah. Something to bear in mind anyway. But yeah, this is I tell you what I love about this headset. It just looks fucking dope.
Yeah, it does look really cool.
It looks like the thing, it looks like that's how you want a VR headset to look. You know, it's cool.
It looks cooler. Obviously, it's got nowhere near it's not a computer like the Vision Pro is, but it looks, I think it looks cooler. I think it looks
I do and it's the fact that it's Renji as well. So one of the other headlines is that they are partnered with Intel and Qualcomm, but they're like they're hinting that there's a monster AR and XR company that they're partnering with, and I couldn't figure out who it was, and I can't find out who it was, but there is some serious industry level excitement about this device, which is why it's worth bearing in mind. So we won't be using this device. The device we're going to be using is the Lynx. So the Lynx headset is it's an open source, like ferociously open source headset, the Lynx R1. And I have it on good authority that it is like one of the most comfortable, most lightweight, most versatile AR devices. And it just seems like it's a really, really, really good product. We should be getting that next week. Again, similar kind of pricing. It's $849 for the standard edition, $1,299 for the enterprise edition. But yeah, I'm really excited to try that one out because, you know, like you, I just have a kind of weird fascination with this stuff.
Yeah, it's cool to see the market expanding and all these products coming online, isn't it? And like the Big Screen Beyond is probably this one's main competitor in that it's kind of face molded and it's lightweight and whatever. But there's lots of good options now. I'm tempted.
Have you seen that one that has like the 240 degree field of view? It's like literally this big.
Yeah, it's a stretch on like your face. I think we did it in a previous video. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's it's interesting. But people are the fact that people are making stuff at relatively accessible prices now is cool. It's like we're moving towards whatever it is that we're getting to. The fact that it's still tethered is still a little bit annoying, isn't it? But mate, it's fine for work at home. But surely I can't understand why you wouldn't be able to stream a connection across, why you couldn't do that wirelessly in the future. I don't know. But obviously, it's not really my place to say. But yeah, interesting. Cool. I'll link it and you can check it out. And it is on sale now. These are for pre-order, so you can get in the queue if you think it's cool and want to do that. All right, final story we wanted to jump into was the possible story that Yugo have quietly abandoned or Improbable themselves have left the team to create Other Side. Now, for a bit of backstory, I'm sure most of you know, but Yuga Labs, obviously the parent company of Bored Ape Yacht Club, own the CryptoPunks and Meebits IP and various other things. And Other Side is their metaverse, which they've been building and really the pinnacle of everything that they've been doing and what probably propelled along with the market in general, like a lot of the hype around Yuga Labs at the beginning was this is their kind of ultimate goal. So we've talked about Improbable before, and they've been on the show. Herman Narula has written a great book about it as well, and he's a very smart guy. And they are an interesting company. They're a British company, but they, as far as I was aware, kind of owned some pretty unique technology that made it possible for lots of people to be present in a world at the same time. I think up to 10,000 people, which is something that is very technically difficult and most other games and open worlds just can't do. And they've been running the trips to other side and been demonstrating all this technology. And they did some kind of live baseball games, I think, with MLB in America, where people came in. And very cool company, making very cool stuff, have been around for a long time as well. The reason that this is kind of become interesting is that Yuga announced they're partnering with Hadion, who are, I think, Improbable's direct rival, basically another spatial technology company that have lots of sort of networking solutions in a similar way and can create amazingly high fidelity virtual experiences. So the fact that they'd hired them as well, and I also saw a tweet from Herman which was replying to somebody asking what happened to Other Side, and he said, "What do you mean we're not Yuga Labs? We are Improbable. We build lots of metaverse content and support multiple efforts. If you have any questions about Yuga, I'm afraid they've told us not to say anything to you directly. I would just say that it's my opinion that fast releases are the way." So it seems like, I'm guessing, reading between the lines, that this was taking a long time, and yeah, there's been a parting of ways, perhaps. What are your thoughts here?
Well, I think anyone that was sort of vaguely connected to this space or connected or around Yuga in any shape or form knew that Improbable had backed away. There would be probably a number of reasons why they had, but it was a pretty open secret that Improbable was not likely to be a partner with them moving forward. The Other Side trips, which were these first sort of live fire exercises where they got like 4,000 people in a space together, were pretty fun. And you could tell that they were basically kind of creating a Yuga-themed or a Bored Ape-themed version of an experiment that they already had built and ready to go, and that they could you know, demonstrate stuff with. It's a long way from doing that to building an MMORPG of the scale that Bored Ape needs to deliver. And it's worth taking a step back here to think about where Bored Apes have gotten to and what level of investment has been made in them, because the Bored Ape Yacht Club was the subject of a absolutely unbelievable investment round led by A16Z. A16Z came in, led the round, and Bored Ape Yacht Club was valued at $4.5 billion. $4.5 billion. Even at the time when everything was overinflated, it seemed just astronomically impossible. So what they were doing was they were valuing cultural insertion as a precursor of likely future technical success. The problem is, like, the Bored Ape Yacht Club founders pretty much have disappeared off the radar now. So they are out of the picture. They've brought on a new CEO. But the motor in the middle of all of this is A16Z. So A16Z, Andreessen Horowitz, invested in Improbable back in 2015. So obviously, here's how the conversation goes. Hey guys, we'll invest in you, and we'll link you up with these amazing guys, Improbable. They'll be able to build what you want to do. This makes total sense. But obviously, Improbable have their own agenda. They want to do their own thing. And it's entirely possible that Herman and his team don't like Bored Apes, don't like the culture, they don't like the thing, and they have their own things that they want to do. But if you're, you know, one of your lead investors is encouraging you to do this, then you do it. But it seems very clear that there's a whole bunch of conversations that have happened and a bit of backing away. And it's also entirely possible that, you know, as they've developed the Other Side, and I believe that they have over 100 people now working on this, maybe more, they just realized that they needed something else. Who knows when the Other Side or the promise of the Other Side will be delivered. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. It's just a really hard thing to pull off, not just technically, but also just, you know, in terms of getting people to actually play it, make a game that's fun, make an experience that's fun. You can put all the fancy graphics and all the fancy, you know, trailers you want on top of something, but if people fundamentally don't want to be there, or it's shit, you've got a giant, very expensive plate of egg on your face. And, you know, from our point of view, okay, speaking completely frankly, as Based AF, the thing that we're really good at is telling stories. We are good at content creation. And every single one of these platforms, they're crying out for content. They can build tech, great. Can't tell a story. They can't explain to people what's going on. And they need content creators. They need people to build their own experiences, and they need to, you know, build exciting things on top of the worlds that they're building. Otherwise, it makes no sense. You know, look at the paradigm right now. Roblox, Fortnite, Zepeto, like, it's all about small creators building on top of stuff. And fundamentally, the Yuga Labs proposition is flawed because it's so expensive to buy the assets themselves. It seems just to get started, you know, in that ecosystem, that you've limited to like 1% of, like, the 1% that are already in crypto and in NFTs. It just makes no sense. So when we looked at this and we looked at, like, who would we want to work with? Who would we want to make stuff with? The other side makes no sense. I'm no interest in working with them at all. Not at all. It just doesn't excite me. I'm way more interested in what's happening at Futureverse, for instance. But again, you know, they have 3D assets. They have an interesting take on how to do all this stuff. But yeah, like, we, you know, it's still a long way off. Like, where are the users? Where are the people who are going to come and play? So for us right now, it makes way more sense for us to build out our IP, our audience on Fortnite, even if it's not Web3 and it's not crypto. And I'm pretty hopeful that with something like the Emergence SDK from Crucible, we will be able to plug in NFTs and assets that are Web3 enabled into UEFN within the next 12 months. That, for me, is just, as a business owner, it's just the way more logical step in all of this. So I'm rooting for Web3 native, but my gut tells me that Web2 native that has a Web3 pipe is going to be how, at least from my point of view, we get this stuff connected up.
Mm. And it seems to be the way that Epic are doing it as well, right? Allowing Web3 games on their stores and stuff like that, and the kind of Nike.swoosh stuff that was a bit integrated into Fortnite and UEFN side of stuff. Like, yeah, it's so interesting because also the models are, like, it's only really been in the last, I guess, 6 to 8 months that we've seen the kind of UEFN thing take shape and make loads of sense. And obviously, user-generated content as a thing in virtual worlds has been a thing for a long time, but like the like obvious way to do it is only, it's still coming through as what works. So like, other side have this such big promise. I think I remember you saying a while ago, which was controversial at the time, but like, if anyone was overvalued, it probably was Yuga, because so much is riding on getting other side right. If it's not fucking amazing, then it's downside from there in the short term or whatever, because they have to get it 100% right.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an investor at 4.5 billion, what's your exit look like? How long is that going to take? So 10 years from now, is Yuga going to be valued at 450 billion? Is Yuga going to be valued at 25 billion? As for me, that's a stretch. I am very happy to be proven wrong. I think it's hard. History's littered with so many companies that got absurd astronomical valuations and absurd investment rounds, and it places just so much pressure on a company. It's very rare for a company to get through that in one piece. We should probably talk about Hadean, because they're no mugs. Oh, they're absolutely not mugs. They're a phenomenal company, and they are, you're right, doing similar things to Improbable. The most likely thing is it was a culture clash. That's probably what it looks like. And Hadean is by no means a kind of poor, you know, bridesmaid to all of this. They're dope. Epic invested in them, Ericsson invested in them, Microsoft invested in them. Like, they just legit. So this is not by no means like a, you know, swapping out a bad part for a good part. This is aggressive from Yuga, and good for them for at least kind of pursuing things. But then you have to remember, they got a ton of cash in the bank. They made so much money, it's almost painful. So they basically just have to weather the storm and build. But I know a lot of people who were heavily invested in that ecosystem who are disappointed by all of this and are looking to cash out. And like, obviously, this is the worst time to cash out. I think if you are invested in this ecosystem and you don't have a time horizon to play with, it's probably worth just seeing where this goes. Because like I said, Hadean are pretty impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's well said for sure. All right, yeah, well, those are the main stories. Maybe you could tell us what's happening at Base. You've got this world record coming up in VR, which I assume you're excited about, but also it's probably going to be quite intense. At Metaplex, we should mention that as well.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, we're a young company trying to do crazy things and stretch ourselves and we've had this mocap volume building and being developed for a long time, and it just got to a point where we needed to put a show out. So with the MKBHD video that we did, which has proven to be a real success for us, getting a Web2 stalwart, a metaverse cynic, and a crypto skeptic to engage with it and find some mutual respect was a big deal for us, and it's sort of opened the door to a bunch of things that are super interesting. I can't talk about all of them, but what we realized is that we needed to put out a weekly show that would test the limits of the system and force us to work faster and force us to solve problems that we probably hadn't really addressed head on. And so that's where this show Metaplex came from. So where we kind of talk quite reasonably about stuff in a quite optimistic way about stuff, I've created this character who just has these very hot takes on metaverse stories that are coming out. And what's been really interesting about that is exploring this other side of myself through this character. Because it turns out, like, it's the weirdest thing. I get in the volume, I put on the suit, I see the character, and he has a massive mohawk and everything. And he starts talking about stuff. Stuff comes out by being that character that I'm not prepared for. And what happened was he turned into a real lecherous douchebag. And I realized why that was, is because he's stuck in a room and he can't go anywhere. And what he really wants is to meet some girls. But he has a terrible way of expressing that because he's a douchebag and he has no experience. And someone messaged me today saying, aren't you a bit worried about how this character is going to come across? Because people could think of this as being really misogynistic. And there's this, you know, in the UK right now, Russell Brand, who's a very famous presenter and host and podcaster, there's some historical allegations that have resurfaced about him that are really shocking. And my character has a little bit of the Russell Brand about it. So what I'm very careful to do in each episode is just make sure that the mask drops and you see what this character is really thinking, that he's actually very lonely, and because he can't go anywhere and he can't do anything, he's kind of stuck. And he's also really deeply conflicted about his own identity. But it's a fair point. Like, this is a digital character that represents a point of view that has, it's different to me, but it's coming from me. And that I wasn't expecting that. I thought I would just perform it, but it's different. And so that's really interesting. And then we just get hammered for the facial performance. It's such a hard balancing act trying to record stuff live, which is how we do it. We just record exactly what the monitor's putting out, and then we edit with that, because doing traditional animation pipelines is way too slow. So I literally, before the podcast, I was in the volume doing a high fidelity facial motion capture session where we're trying to get like the most emotive, most involving digital character performance we can using a tool called MetaHuman Animator. So I'm really curious to see how that one's kind of worked out. We're really pushing hard to try and get face capture and facial performance to a better level, because that uncanny valley thing where you can't connect with people through their eyes, and yeah, it's super interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. And very interesting. I'll link it all below. It's definitely worth a watch. The studio looks amazing. Just the whole environment's very cool. And it's little clues to content of the future for sure. So links below. But I think that's probably today's pod.
That is probably today's pod.
Peace.